Hi, this is the AWS Podcast, and I'm Jeff Barr. I'm sitting in the basement of the AWS Loft in San Francisco with Austin Collins, who recently came into prominence as the developer and founder of the JAWS project. So as part of our Intel Startup Spotlight, I'm looking forward to learning all about JAWS. To kind of rewind the story a bit, a few months ago I was reading Hacker News. I saw an entry near the top of the page, and it was a link to the I think it was to the GitHub repo for JAWS, and it mentioned JAWS, it mentioned AWS, it mentioned Lambda. It looked kind of interesting, so I emailed Austin, and he wrote back right away. And why don't you take the story from there?
Sure. Yeah. I just moved up to the Bay Area. I'm a startup guy. I like to get projects up there fast, and see if the market likes them, see what people say. And so Lambda really spoke to me because I do a lot of stuff with very little resources. And managing servers when you're just one or two people is a bit of a pain. So when I saw Lambda come out, I said, this is pretty interesting. This is something that I don't have to scale myself. It has a cool workflow because my functions are all in my application are all isolated. And I only get charged anytime those Lambda functions are called, which spoke volumes to me because when you're a scrappy entrepreneur living in San Francisco, it gets expensive.
So good technology match and also a good budget match.
Yes, yeah, exactly. And I've been forking over tons of cash every single month on servers. So when Lambda came out, I saw all that stuff. I was like, oh, this is great. I want to build entire applications just on Lambda. And I couldn't do that until API Gateway came out, because that was the one missing piece. That's the URL routing layer for Lambda. And as soon as API Gateway came out, I think the next day I was refactoring my startup to use Lambda exclusively on the back end and API Gateway. And what happened was all these tools are so new. They're so cool and a little bleeding edge. And there wasn't any material where I can go and look at how to architect an entire application using just Lambda and API Gateway, because API Gateway just came out the day before. So immediately what I started doing was just trying to figure out what the application architecture looks like using this stuff. And as I continued on with this refactor, what started to emerge was a framework. Something that had structure and best practices and optimization tricks and stuff like that. And I continued working on this framework until the framework became cooler than the startup I was working on. So I'm like,
what was your original idea for that startup?
The original idea was users have their own databases. And whenever they go to use a web application, they just connect their database to that web application. And the web application can persist data, can read and write data back to their database.
Okay.
So it's like, I already have blog posts or products on my personal database. I want to go use like an e-commerce web application. So I just, register by connecting my database, basically. And that application can instantly read all my product data, and I've connected it, I've given it authorization to my database, and it can immediately start putting my data to work, right? So it's sort of streamlining the process, also empowering the user at the same time because they own all the data. They could just go connect their personal database to some of the sources.
So you originally set out to build a really awesome framework to build that product, and then as you get more into looking at Lambda, looking at the API Gateway, and you're sketching out JAWS, you're suddenly saying, this is the actual, like, really, really cool thing that I really should be doing.
Well, I wasn't that certain about it just yet. I knew it was cool. And I'm like, a lot of other developers are going to like this, because I'm digging this workflow. The bane of my existence as a developer is deploying a huge code base up onto a server, and it's all interconnected code, so if I touch one thing over here, it's going to affect like three things over here, and that's just a frustrating process, especially when you're a startup and you need to be agile and always be pivoting or changing things. So anyway, when Lambda came out, this idea that you could just put your image resizing function deployed in its own container, and anytime you needed to update that or change that, you only affected that one little piece of isolated code, is really cool.
So we've got this nice modularity, and we've got this security from knowing that you're not going to break something inadvertently by revving part A, and you won't break part B.
Exactly. Right.
Okay. When did you know that you had something that was more than just a fun little side project as part of your bigger application?
That was the day I put it on Hacker News.
Okay.
Yeah.
Recount that day. What was that like?
The day was like any other day when I put stuff on Hacker News. I post it, and then I become depressed because I think no one's ever going to look at it.
I know that feeling.
It sinks straight to the bottom. You know, like 99.9% of all content posted on the internet just gets surpassed. So I put it up on Hacker News. I said, I'm going to go, you know, make a nice sandwich, make myself feel better. And I came back a couple hours later, and it was on the front page. Mm. And number two position eventually, over 300 votes. And then people started flying over to the GitHub repo. I soon had 1,000 stars in 24 hours. And then I would go on Twitter, just obsessively reloading, you know, every 5 minutes. And because people were writing about JOS, this framework that I put, you know, that I open sourced on GitHub. And they kept saying all these positive things, which was also crazy because I guess you could have attention for a lot of things in life. You know,
yeah.
For example, like Donald Trump, a lot of people are talking about him, but they're saying all types of different things, you know. But in this unique case, everyone was saying positive stuff.
They're looking at this and saying, Austin's got this awesome idea, and he's realized it with his initial code, and heading in the right direction. We love what we see.
Yeah, which, immediately I said, okay, I feel like I've struck something here. I mean, this idea of serverless applications is really resonating with developers in general. And a few hours after that, I put the startup aside and immediately started working on the framework, you know, full time. I said, I'm doing this. This is sort of my calling. And I haven't stopped. And that was only almost 3 months ago. And ever since then, I mean, that was just the beginning of the journey. So, it's been a wild ride.
So you've got that repo out there. You've got folks starring it because they like it. Do you have people contributing code at this point?
Oh, yeah. We have an awesome community. So since then, I think we now have 5,000 stars on GitHub, over 5,000 stars. I'd say we have over 100 contributors, not just in code, but I put our roadmap on Google Docs so that it's public and people can see, you know, where we're going and they can have input on the direction. Because this is all really one big experiment right now. This is like, how do we do everything serverless? How do we do architect stuff where every single function is isolated in its own container? It's a little different. And figuring out the best workflow, figuring out the best way to do that is what this is all about. So I'm trying to be very transparent and open, and I take input all day long. And I say, you know, over 100 people have contributed, and, you know, there's maybe 200 people in the Gitter chat room at any given time. And we're working on figuring this out.
So in another sense, maybe you've, like, created this magnet that's attracting people with a certain set of characteristics that want to build really... They want to build applications quickly. They have bought into the serverless model. They love the isolation. What are the kind of attributes do you think are attracting people to what you've done?
I think the cost savings are big. They were big for me personally, especially when you have a situation where servers are underutilized. And I think there's a lot of that going around. And it actually costs people a lot of money at the end
Definitely.
Of the day. But with Lambda, there's no such thing as underutilization. Because that stuff only runs, you know, when it's called. So that was really interesting to me personally, but the developers mostly like the workflow.
Okay.
They honestly don't care. The companies will pay for this, whatever, but we just love working.
Are you at the point where there are actually, like, applications under development or deployed that are you can point to as some JAWS success stories?
Still waiting for that one prime example, I'd say. And the reason why it's not there yet is because we're making breaking changes so fast. And if there's anyone in the community listening to this, I apologize. We're stabilizing soon. We're getting there. And I just, you know, I just want to do things the best possible way.
Do you have a criteria or a set of features that you'll say, okay, this makes it a 1.0 and we'll consider it stable and we'll then move forward from there?
I do. Yeah, and that's and we're working on that. We're actually on 1.0, but it's beta, right? And now we're kind of on 1.5. It's still beta, but we're getting there. The most demand we get is just for just being an abstraction layer on top of API Gateway and Lambda that helps with the developer experience. You know,
okay.
Solving all the little tiny things that aren't quite there yet with Lambda. So we focus on JAWS is mostly it's just a command line tool. And what it does is it provides structure and scaffolding. Here's how you here's what a project directory structure looks
okay.
like. Whenever you know, here's what a Lambda function. Here's how it should what the file structure looks like of that. And also optimization. So with Lambda, you have these containers that need to spin up really really fast to handle requests, and you want to return respond to those requests. as fast as possible. So one thing, a big value add that JAWS provides is we optimize all your native functions for you. And we do that with a mix of browserify and minification. And that will trim down, you know, I'll see like a 20 megabyte Lambda function be maybe 500 kilobytes.
Oh, wow. Okay.
It makes
okay, so you actually are in part of the, you're in the step between developer writes code and developer uploads code to Lambda.
Exactly, right. And we're going to grow beyond that. But right now, that's where the most demand is.
So when I haven't looked in detail enough about what you have, but kind of if I've got, let's say, a static web page, would I then serve up additional web pages from JAWS result in as links from that page, or can I fill in parts of the page with JAWS, or how does it interact with the browser?
Well, JAWS. Well, first off, static web pages are really best handled with S3. I mean, you guys are already knocking it out of the park with that, and I don't know if there's much we could do there yet.
Let's say I have like a static front end that people land on, and then they can click on some options and then make something happen from there. At what point does my Lambda code come into play, or my JAWS code, or is that even the right way to think about it?
That's when you need to do some interactivity,
yeah,
something like that, so some back-end processing. So as soon as you need to do that, in the example of there's a static contact form page, as soon as you need to be able to accept that email or that contact information, that's where Lambda kicks in, and you don't have to, you know, build this big application, deploy it to a server. You just say, here's my one REST API endpoint that's going to await contact information.
Okay.
So, but beyond that, right now JAWS is focused on web and mobile applications. But I think a lot of what Lambda is being used for today is just event handling functions triggered by other AWS services outside of API Gateway. So it's an interesting audience, because there's people who want to build entire web and mobile and IoT applications with Lambda on their back end. Then there's this huge group of people who are just using Lambda to respond to other events, you know, outside of that stuff. So we now say JAWS is the serverless project framework, not the serverless application framework.
Yeah,
so
okay.
We want to cover all those.
Broadening
people.
It a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah, and Lambda, you know, has the potential to serve web, mobile, and IoT applications.
Yeah, and certainly if you look at the things we announced at reInvent, we're definitely wiring Lambda up to even more parts of AWS, things like the config rules and being able to get notified when parts of your environment change and be able to inspect those and make sure that they're in compliance with your organization's rules. Certainly, you know, point to even more ways that Lambda is just becoming an intrinsic part of the AWS experience.
Yeah, I mean, I'm the ultimate fanboy for these tools. And there's a great analyst, Janik Hiram, and he wrote this piece in GigaOm, and he had this quote that really inspired me in the early days. He said, Lambda has the potential to be the focal point of AWS cloud. As soon as I read that,
that's
I'm like,
pretty good, yeah.
As soon as I read that, I'm like, he's right. You know, this whole serverless, event-driven sort of infrastructure, it has, you know, not just the potential to be the focal point of AWS cloud, but just like all cloud in general. And so, you know, especially since I read that quote, I've just been gung-ho, serverless guy.
You know, it does point out, a couple things you've told me already point out the importance of, if you like something online, it's actually kind of important to tell the people that put it together and put their blood and sweat into it, like actually give them some encouragement and some feedback. I mean, it's so easy to assume that always someone else is taking care of that part of it. But, you know, what you share with me already says, you know, if you see something awesome, you know, like it or star it or send an email or vote it up or whatever is the appropriate thing to do. But, like, register your interest in some way that's actually going to result in the creator really knowing that you're appreciating their hard work.
Yeah, especially when the creator is just working out of their studio apartment in Oakland and starving it out, working on this all day long and waking up to tons of GitHub issues.
I can only imagine. So you went from working on this alone to, I know that you were at reInvent just 2 weeks ago, actually,
right?
As we're recording this. What did you learn and see and do at reInvent?
reInvent was the first time I actually interacted physically with JAWS users, because for the first few months I was just in my apartment working on JAWS and talking to people, you know, in the chat room and stuff, and saying, you know, hey, what do you think about this? But when I got to reInvent, it was a whole other world, and I got a ton of feedback and a ton of enthusiasm. So, you know, as I told you out there in the hall, when Ryan and I, and Ryan is part of the core JAWS team, When Ryan and I were going to go do our breakout session at reInvent, we had to stop and ask people what they were lined up for, because we didn't know it was going to be.
And it was all for you guys.
Yeah, I mean, I was, you know, I was hopeful. I was like, mm-hmm. It was my first time at reInvent. I never, you know.
What did you actually present? I know that you've got there's a video online of your session, and like the other several hundred sessions, it's on my list of things I sure hope to have time to watch someday.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. It was half a demo, it was half the story about Lambda and the benefits and all that, sort of, a lot of what we discussed here, and then there's a big demo in there.
Now, did you get to meet some of the folks that you'd been interacting with online and get to kind of connect with them in person?
Yeah, absolutely. It was very cool. We hung out with them previously all the time, so that was neat. Also, we introduced something else that we're working on with JAWS, which is actually working right now, and that's the most exciting thing, but... I thought to myself, what's cooler than having your application code all isolated at the function level, deployed in containers that scale horizontally without you having to deal with any of that stuff, and you only get charged whenever that function or container is called. What's cooler than that? And I thought to myself, if that code was already pre-written, right? So then I came up with this concept about modules, like a module ecosystem. If you could take a Lambda function that does one task, like here's a Lambda function that sends out text messages via Twilio, here's a Lambda function that sends out transactional email, or here's a group of Lambda functions that handle user CRUD operations, create, okay. Read, update. What if you could can up that code and then offer it publicly, in an open source ecosystem, and people could take that stuff and just install it into their serverless project to rapidly build applications. So we started this experiment with JAWS and the community to create something called AWS Modules. Mm. The acronym is AWSOME. So hopefully it's a marketing win.
Okay. So you seem to have this kind of a knack for kind of understanding the kind of pain points for developers and then understanding good general purpose ways to address them. How did that come about, do you think?
I don't know. I mean, there's a lot of different types of developers.
Well, do you have a formal background as a developer, or did you kind of get into it through a different route?
No, I come from a completely unconventional route. I'm from Hollywood, and when I was younger, I thought I was going to be a filmmaker. So when I was like 16, I moved to LA, and I started a post-production studio. And what I did all day long is people gave me their footage, and they said, make a story out of this. Turn it into something, because we don't know what to do with it. Most of the time, there's this old
saying. Here's a bunch of random stuff. Yeah. There has to be a story buried in here somewhere.
Right. I mean, the editor of films and television, they're usually like the last writer. And there's always that saying, we'll fix it in post. Yeah. So I came from that background. And I think what that has helped me with today is that when I, there was a point where I converted over to being a programmer, because programming is just way more interesting than Hollywood these days. I mean, Hollywood, if I go see a movie this weekend, it's going to be a vampire film, it's going to be a superhero film or something. It's gotten very formulaic, to me at least, right? But then you read the newspaper and you see massive domestic spying and cryptocurrencies and drones and just this crazy stuff. And to me, it's like reality has just gotten stranger than fiction. And, at some point I said, maybe it was like 8 years ago, I just got into programming full-time and was a JavaScript developer. But what's that sort of given me, coming from that visual storytelling background, is that I know that I never want to make disembodied software, something that doesn't have a voice, JAWS, it's got this image of a shark. It's a big shark, right? Because this is a big deal. This is like a blockbuster. This is a paradigm shift in how applications will be developed. At least I believe that right now. It's the early days, but I'm on this path.
Are you at the point where there's like good tutorial materials and blog posts and a JAWS book and things like that? Or is that all always
a JAWS memoir? that's coming, but we're still stabilizing the code, and I'm waiting. I have so much to give in that space. I can't wait to do it, because I know as a developer, I just want to see it like a really nice high quality tutorial video on YouTube, and I'll rapidly adopt whatever it is. And I know that I'm capable of doing that because my background in post production and whatnot. But the code has to be stable first. Otherwise, I'm going to be just refactoring the code base, refactoring all these tutorial videos and stuff. So we're almost there, but that stuff is coming.
So you have to make that really difficult kind of judgment call between shoot for perfection and accept good enough and call that the first one and then call it the second one, the third one, and just always kind of do that balancing act we need to have stable releases, but we have this infinitely cool vision for the indefinite future. Kind of weigh those two against each other.
I'll say I've never given up on perfection. It's cost me many hours of sleep. Like, I'm working on JAWS like 14 hours a day right now.
And now, is there a business model for you around JAWS at this point? Or is it paying the bills? Or how's that going to work out? Or should it work out?
Yeah, that's the question, right? I mean, I'm an entrepreneur sort of by nature. I grew up around entrepreneurs, and I always wear that hat, and I don't think I could ever take it off, to be honest. You know, there's clearly something here. But also what's attracted people is that it's open source, and I respect that. I'm like, I get it. I want these tools. You know, when you ask me, you know, how do I have a knack for picking up on what developers want? I don't know, because I'm not those other people. I'm only myself. I only know this is what I want to see. And I need this to happen right away, because this is a great utopian vision, and you know, it should exist, and that's really what keeps me up at night. But we're looking at doing something here. Not sure what that is yet. We have lots of plans. It's interesting. There's the framework, and then there's the module ecosystem, and I'm totally gung-ho about serverless in general. I think again, has the potential to be the focal point of all cloud infrastructure. But first and foremost, my intention is to keep JAWS completely open source. And I want to just make it robust right now, and I want to make it great, and I want to keep it free. And then take it from there and see where that leads.
Okay. So given that you're, what, like 4 months into this?
Almost three.
Almost three. Okay.
Yeah.
So it's kind of hard at this point to predict the future going years on out, but this could be the thing that keeps you occupied for the next decade if things go as it seems like they've gone so far.
Yeah. Yeah, I hope so, because I'm, you know, I'm looking to do something interesting. I hope to do something interesting. I think this is it.
When you were at reInvent, did you have a chance to talk to like the Lambda team or the API Gateway team? Did you run into any of those folks?
Yeah, I tried to hang out with them all the time. I mean, those guys are pretty cool in general, but they've been incredibly helpful. And I was easy to spot because Amazon gave me this embarrassing disco hoodie from a company called Beta Brand, which is a cool company, and there's also some engineers from Beta Brand who hang out in the JAWS chat room, and I like those guys. But they have one really embarrassing hoodie that Amazon gave to me.
Oh, that super bright, super colored one.
It's the glittering one.
Yeah.
You know? I mean,
there was a small number of those set aside for a small set of folks we thought like went so far above and beyond at reInvent. It's like, you know what, let's make sure everybody knows that Austin's here. And
yeah, they did. And, you know, they tried to hang me from the roof and spin me because I look like a disco ball. I even went up to the counter to go get the hoodie, and the guys were just laughing at me. They're like, oh, you got
He's
one
here.
Of those. Yeah, they looked at each other. And
it's always nice to be specially recognized, I think, so.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I don't need to be glittering sometimes, but yeah. So, yeah, the Amazon engineers, as of right now, people always say, you know, does Amazon support this project? You know, are they funding you? And I say, no, that would be cool. But that's not the case right now. It's just me and a whole bunch of people volunteering their time from all around the world. But what they have done, what Amazon has done, is all their engineers are talking to me all the time. And they're helping me with best practices and how to do this and make sure that it's not steering anyone down a path that just isn't going to work for them eventually.
Okay.
So I talked to their engineers. I said, look, I don't want to just make a great serverless framework. I want to make a great AWS framework, you know, and I want this to just be the best possible way to build apps on AWS in general. And also it's going to be serverless, which will be cool. So got to give it up to the Lambda team, Tim Wagner, AJ over there, API Gateway, Stefano, Simon, you, of course, you know, I don't even know if I would be here today if you hadn't stepped in and said, like, oh, yeah, you should continue doing this in that email.
When I did that and you thanked me afterward, I just realized that, you know, as fans and observers, we do have this, like, responsibility to, like, actually, like, make sure that the creators are getting that encouragement, because it's far too easy to assume that someone else took care of that part. But if everybody makes that assumption, well, then nobody does it. And it's like, I start to think now that it's often important to make sure that something happens twice rather than zero times. Because, like, if everybody assumes that someone else did it, then you get the zero. But if you always say, well, I might be the only one, well, then you at least, for sure, you'll get one. And then that's far better than zero. So, And if it's redundant, well, that never hurt either, right?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, especially when we're talking scrappy developers really hustling here, you know, working in the dark for a lot of the time, you know, not interacting with a whole bunch of
indeed.
People,
yeah.
Which is where I was at, you know, tapping them on the shoulder and saying, hey, this is interesting.
Yeah.
This is something, is the validation, you know, that speaks volumes.
It's really, really a good lesson there. I totally, totally agree. So we're here in the loft. Do you happen to visit the loft or hang out here, or have you presented or attended sessions or any of those kinds of things?
Yeah, I've been here several times. I love it. I think it's totally
in
cool.
fact, I think we ran into each other, literally ran into each other the last time I was down here.
Yeah, so, right. Yeah, I saw your mythical figure over there, and I was like, that looks like Jeff Barr. I mean, I got to go talk to him. So, yeah, that's how I ran into you the first time, physically at least. But yeah, I love this space. It's totally cool. I remember the first time I came here, I had an interview with an engineer. Afterwards, he said, you want to hang out here and work? I didn't even know it was a co-working space. And anyone who's just an Amazon customer can
Yeah, they're can totally welcome to come here and co-work and have meetings and avail themselves of our Wi-Fi and our snacks and our drinks. And right. We've got classes and solution architects and all kinds of goodies here. So, and we've got the loft here. We've got another one in New York. We've got pop-up lofts also in London and Berlin right now as well. So the concept has worked great. And the idea that it's just this kind of local hangout place, and you can go there and you can find some AWS resources and get some stuff done, and maybe just by random happenstance run into somebody else doing something interesting.
Yeah,
it's great that we can facilitate that, I think.
Yeah, I like that last point, especially about running into like-minded people who are using similar tools that you're using. And a lot of when you're an entrepreneur and you come here not already integrated into some big company or something like that, you're just doing your own thing, it's a tough, desolate path. And this is kind of a cool, like lifeboat or something, or lighthouse, you know, where people can gather.
Yeah, I suspect if you put a sign upstairs and said, you know, Jaws office hours 3 o'clock to 4 o'clock on
right.
alternate Friday afternoons, you'd have folks showing up and willing to talk to you. And if you do that, let me know, and we'll publish it and we'll tweet it and so forth. And
I want to do that.
You never know. I'm sure that you've got lots of users here in in this local area. We could probably draw a 3 mile circle around the loft, and you'd probably run into a whole bunch of your users and contributors.
Yeah, I want to do some type of office hours thing. That would be cool. I might even get into live streaming again, which I used to do a little while ago.
Mm-hmm.
But
like live streaming your development sessions?
Yeah, development sessions, and people could just chime in and say, hey,
you forgot parentheses.
This issue. Yeah.
Wow, I can only imagine having someone watching over my shoulder as I'm typing. And
yeah, it's tough, but I came from Hollywood, and I used to work on a lot of reality television projects. So I'd always be assembling something, and I'd have these reality television producers standing over my shoulder. And those guys are characters. These people make reality television for a living, and you know, just what they do is they're just trained. They're like, what is like the worst part of society, and how do we get it on film?
Let's zoom in on it.
Right.
Wow.
Yeah. So I was, you know. I have a good tolerance there.
Interesting. Awesome.
Yeah.
Well, I do really appreciate you coming by to speak with me today. Anything else that we didn't cover that you want to make sure that we addressed in our podcast?
Yeah, I think all the Amazon people who've helped me out, the Lambda team, the API Gateway team, you, I think raises across the board for anyone who's listening. Because, again, I don't know if I'd be here today if you hadn't, you know, given me the encouragement, if any of those guys haven't given me the encouragement. So there's also a great open source community around JAWS. We got some cool characters like Jay Wolf and Dex and Bushley, and my sort of co-founder on the open source project is Ryan. Got to give that up to him, because it's Ryan Pendergrass, and he's just the greatest all around guy. So a couple shout outs for them. And also, as far as the business goes, I think we're going to be in a position to really turn this into something much bigger very soon here. So if anyone likes this story and is interested in this and can relate, you know, to some of the pain points especially that I've spoken to, just hit me up. I'm on Twitter, just Austin Collins, AustenCollins, or go to the repo. I'm in the chat room, in the Gitter chat room all day long. And we may be hiring soon. So if you like this and you got the passion, you know, and you want to swing for the fences and go big, you can't do any harm with me.
Hey, sounds great. This has been the AWS Podcast. I'm Jeff Barr, coming to you from the AWS Loft in San Francisco. And this podcast is part of the Intel Startup Spotlight. Thanks for listening.